Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a source of powerful free resources to help you as a parent or grandparent get equipped to invest in the faith of the next generation. Our Next Gen website has been designed to help empower you to navigate tough issues with the young people in your life. At Next Gen, you'll find articles, entertainment reviews from a Christian perspective, parenting stories, helpful parenting guides, and even answers to the tough questions. All these resources are free as you engage on the front line of raising the next generation for Jesus. So why not register today at premierinsight.org/resources to receive free resources from NextGen. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Good afternoon. Welcome along. I'm Justin Brierley with you for Unbelievable between now and 4 o'clock here on Premier Christian Radio, but listen to around the world via our podcast and our website, premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. Great to have you with me. And well, it's been a crazy week, another crazy week in British politics. You don't have to watch House of Cards. You just have to watch the news programmes in the UK. But we're not doing politics on this programme. We only do that rarely. What we do is thinking through theology and faith. Of course, that interacts often with politics. But today's show is all about doubt and deconstruction. I'll be introducing my guests Lisa Gunga and Elisa Childers very shortly. Got lots of really great stuff coming up soon, though, in the Unbelievable Diary. Want to remind you about Unbelievable Live in LA coming the 11th and 12th of October at Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa. An evening discussion dialogue, the big conversation with John Lennox and Dave Rubin on the Friday night, and a whole day conference with some brilliant speakers, including John Lennox, on the Saturday. So if you're able to get along, haven't yet booked in, find out more about it at unbelievable.live, and do let others know about it as well. We really want to get the message out there to anyone in the Southern California area or beyond who could make it to Unbelievable Live the 11th and 12th of October. Also excited to announce that The Big Conversation Season 2 begins next week. Episode 1 of Season 2 featuring Alistair McGrath and Brett Weinstein debating religion, useful fiction or ultimate truth. That was filmed in front of a live audience in London earlier in the year. That's going to be releasing both here on the radio show and podcast, but also, of course, in video format via our YouTube channel. Do make sure you're signed up to receive notifications about that and the other shows that will be dropping this autumn at thebigconversation.show. We release the promo video just this last week, and I'll be playing out the audio of that a little bit later on. Also excited to be joined a little later on in the programme by Amy Orr Ewing, who's an evangelist and apologist with RZIM. She's going to be talking about another great youth conference coming up in London very soon, in a couple of weeks' time. It's Reboot in central London, so she'll be joining me later on the show. And before we get into today's discussion, the show is always available on video. More and more of our episodes being recorded and put out on our YouTube channel. Today's is no exception, so do go over there and check out today's edition of the show, plus all the other great videos you can find. All of the links available from the show page at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable.
You're unbelievable.
Well, today on the show, we're talking about deconstruction, doubt, and finding faith again. Lisa Gunga and Elisa Childers join me on the show today. Both have had careers in the Christian music industry, and both have gone through spells of severe doubt and deconstruction when it comes to their faith. But both have found their way back again, albeit to quite different understandings of faith and Christianity. And in light of some other recent doubt and deconstruction stories that have been hitting our social media recently, Joshua Harris, Hillsong Worship leader Marty Sampson and others, we're going to be hearing today about their journeys and hearing where they are similar, where they differ in the process. So let's first of all introduce Lisa. Lisa Gunga with her husband Michael heads up the musical collective Gunga. Having begun as a quote-unquote Christian band, their music has essentially charted their own theological journey as both of them became disillusioned with the evangelical churches they began in. And those journeys have been explored in some detail in the Liturgist podcast, to which they're both contributors, and a journey which eventually led Michael to the label of atheist. But for Lisa, it's eventually led back to a progressive and maybe open-ended relationship with God and Christianity, as told in her book, The Most Beautiful Thing I've Seen, Opening Your Eyes to wonder. So first of all, welcome along, Lisa, to the programme. Great to have you on today.
Hi, thanks.
It's great. I'm really looking forward to the conversation with Elisa as well, who we're bringing in shortly. Tell me a little bit about the book first. It was the culmination, I guess, of a long journey. Do you want to give us a sort of very brief overview of what that journey has looked like in its various stages?
Yeah, I grew up a pretty mystical kid. I always believed that there was, or just, I always felt, I guess, didn't know what belief was at that point, but I felt there was always, I don't know, something that I couldn't see. And like a voice, a presence with me. And so I grew up believing that God just was. And then my parents were Baptists and Methodists for a while. And then my mom and I found this really charismatic church, and people were running down the aisles and waving flags. And it looked really exciting to me after being in a church that I was just falling asleep in. And counting, I remember I would count like the light fixtures on the ceiling of the churches that my dad liked, and drawing in the hymnals and just trying to keep myself awake. Been there for some, for lots of reasons. This other church we went to just felt so alive to me. So my mom and I started going to this really charismatic, crazy, wild church, and my dad and my brother and sister would go somewhere else. But and though like my family would all say they were Christian, it was like, for me, I felt like my mom and I really had the thing, right? Like we really, it was like really alive for us. And then for my dad, it felt like this very robotic, systematic thing that he just did. But I'm sure for him, he would say it was very real. So right within the same religion, Christianity, they were like at odds with each other from the beginning. You know, that was like my upbringing. Because my mom's like, your dad's going to hell. and my dad would say my mom was going to hell. So it was very confusing as a kid. But I don't know. I was in. That was church was like the place for me. My home was pretty it's a pretty difficult place to grow up in, and there was abuse in different ways, and church became this really safe place for me, and my faith was the main thing of my life. And so then I was writing songs, and I started singing them in church. I started leading music at our church. I grew up in a tiny, tiny town, and it's like mostly Hispanic, and so we'd sing in English and in Spanish a lot. And it just was very alive and vibrant. But like most people have experienced, like the one place that they feel safe and it feels like their heart is opening, it can also have these really weird rules, and there can just be poisonous things where you don't see them. So there were some things I started questioning a little bit, but I was told you don't question. If you question the Bible, if you question the teacher or the pastor, then you're in essence sinning. So I kind of shut down any kind of questions that I had. But I also didn't really care that much. That leads me to college, and that's where I met Michael. And then we started leading for different organizations, and got hired at a mega church and started traveling around the world with our band. And it felt like we were like our dreams were happening. We played at Hillsong, I remember early on, and I just thought I couldn't believe I was playing at Hillsong. I grew up listening to those songs.
Yeah, sure. I was going to say that for a period, I think this was probably the early 2000s, you kind of were living the dream in a sense at that time, at least, where you were, you know, both music pastors in this very big mega church. But it kind of, I think inevitably you were both, and Michael perhaps especially, on a sort of journey that was sort of, you were starting to question some of the aspects of the evangelical Christian culture at that point. which led, I mean, we're going to have to speed through this inevitably, but it led you eventually to kind of leaving and going to Denver and sort of setting up a house church of sorts. What were the sort of things going on, though, in the background to all of those decisions that were leading both of you to kind of reevaluate the Christian faith you'd obviously both grown up in?
I mean, it seemed like science was not welcome in faith. So that was a big one for us. It didn't seem like the LGBTQ community was welcome fully or welcome to an extent that you could serve, but you couldn't lead. So that became a glaring problem for us, a problem that had always been there and that we were just waking up to. The idea that God's love is so big, but he created the problem of hell. Right. God creating his children with sin and then therefore sending them to hell because of the sin that he knew was already going to happen. I mean, it just seemed like a really, I don't know, it felt really backwards. And once I became a mother, especially, people always told me that once I became a mother, I would understand God's love even more. But I actually began to doubt that even more, because there's no way I would ever do that to my own daughter. Life progressed. And
that, I mean, this was obviously going on with the music career taking off in many ways. And, you know, Gunga became, you know, I have listened to many Gunga tracks, many of my friends into Gunga. I guess to some extent, the big questions that were emerging in both of your walks here were sort of to some extent were not necessarily being broadcast at this point, because you were still as I say, quote unquote, Christian band doing the touring thing. So how was it? Was there a kind of public perception and a kind of what was going on behind the scenes was, I guess, a bit difficult at that point?
Well, I think our perspective was we'd always talked about the doubts in our songs.
Yes.
But that's how art is. You interpret it. And so even when we would say like, I'm doubting, or this song, please be my strength, I don't have it anymore. We were pretty explicit in our songs about what we were struggling with. But I think people didn't understand the full extent because it's art and we all interpret art how we, where we need it. And I love that about art. But so we were always very open about it, and we weren't hiding. We decided pretty early on that we had to be honest because we saw it tear so many people apart. So where we thought we were being honest, other people weren't hearing that, but it came to a head where it eventually became very public on a podcast.
I remember must have been 5 years ago or something when that all kind of exploded to some extent, and there was lots of headlines and things around Michael Gunga especially and so on. But I mean, I want to kind of talk about your journey, but it's linked inevitably to Michael's. And I mean, I don't, you say in the book that you were an atheist for about one day, whereas Michael has sort of essentially adopted that label himself at this point. So to what extent has I mean, that must have obviously at the time caused quite a lot of turmoil. Where has that left you now? How have you kind of, I don't know, come to accept that at some level?
Well, he's not an atheist now. So in terms of, I don't know if I heard that differently than what you were saying it. But at the time, I was terrified. We had a young daughter. We had started a church in Denver, and I didn't know. Everything we were doing, that's how we were surviving, even financially. So it's felt like it felt like everything was falling apart. But I think the moment he told me he was an atheist, that's really where I was like, well, I started questioning my own motives. What is love about if I'm expecting him to be a certain way and that's why I love him? That felt like a shallow love to me. So it really showed me my own heart and why I love, why I'm open to people. It was really difficult. I mean, there were some moments that we just felt like we could really see each other and understand. And I understood why he was an atheist. And again, I felt I felt like my brain was just split. And some days I believed and some days I didn't. Like you said, there was one day I was like, yeah, that's it. I'm an atheist. I can't believe anything. But I had so many mystical experiences growing up. And again, like my faith was the thing that carried me through my whole life. So for me, I just couldn't adopt the label as atheist. So there were some times it felt like we really understood and saw each other. And then there were times we just thought our marriage was over, that everything was falling apart. But we just continued every day to try to see each other and I think I really realize a lot about the patriarchy that I'd grown up in, thinking that for some reason I needed to follow his line of thinking and not follow my own heart. So that was another thing that really opened up for me.
We'll come back to this journey shortly, because there's lots of things I want to ask you about. There's obviously some big things in the book that we haven't sort of got to yet. But really time to introduce our other guest on the podcast today. Elisa Childers was part of the band Zoe Girl. They had several hits in the early 2000s before going their separate ways. Elisa has continued in music, but her journey also took her onto a place of questioning her own faith quite intensely. That in turn led her to apologetics via organisations such as Ravi Zacharias International Ministries. And having come back to effectively a more or less evangelical faith, she now speaks and writes on apologetics herself and hosts the Elisa Childers podcast. Elisa, welcome along to the show. As I say, we've got two people on here who have not dissimilar backgrounds in some ways and have had similar experiences, but have come out in different places ultimately on that. And I think that's where we're going to find some really interesting conversation on today's program. But I'll give you the chance as well to sort of give us a taste of your growing up. I take it you were probably raised in a Christian family yourself, Elisa.
Yes, I was. And I grew up in Southern California. And my dad was one of the barefoot, drugged out hippies that became a Christian in the Jesus movement in the late 60s and early 70s of Calvary Chapel and other churches in that area. And so he had been searching for God. And he wasn't raised in the church or in any kind of evangelical type church. I think he was raised with some kind of Catholicism, but just search for God through Buddhism and Hinduism and other Eastern philosophies and religions, and ended up finding God in a little country church in Southern California. And my mom had been raised Assembly of God, but had walked away from her faith a little bit and had come back to the Lord in that time. And so that's sort of the background of the type of Christianity that I was raised in. My dad was also a musician, so he toured all over the world. I got to go all over the world as a young girl, and I would watch him sing and preach the gospel to thousands of people in one situation, and then the next weekend he would be at the mission on Skid Row singing for 50 homeless guys. And so that type of ministry was really big in my family. We regularly worked the soup lines and the Fred Jordan Mission in LA on Skid Row, and did all kinds of street evangelism on Hollywood Boulevard. So I encounter a lot of atheists and people of other religious philosophies and backgrounds and upbringings. And I guess I just wanted to lay the foundation that the type of Christianity that was modeled for me was really authentic. It was really genuine. It wasn't ruled by legalism or what I hear from so many people that began to question their faith. They had been raised in these really strict and legalistic, almost cult-like situations, and I'm so thankful that I didn't have that type of experience. Now, not at all trying to pretend that it was all perfect. It certainly wasn't. But my parents just modeled repentance for me. They modeled, Bible study. And so as early as I can remember, I've loved Jesus. I don't even remember a time in my life when I wasn't aware of his presence. Even when my mom came in when I was 5 years old and asked me if I wanted to invite Jesus into my heart, I just remember being kind of confused by the question. Like, well, I mean, he's already there. So I kind of didn't even understand the question. But I've always loved the Bible. So as far back as I can remember, I would read and study the Bible. So with that background, I never really encountered any kind of doubt. There was no reason for me to doubt my Christianity, or that the claims of Christianity were true, or that the Bible was the word of God, or anything like that, because it all just, it was a beautiful presentation to me. And the Christians that I knew were people who loved God, loved other people, clothed the naked and fed the poor. And that was how I was raised. And so it wasn't until actually after my time with Zoe Girl, around 2007 is when we came off the road and we all started to get married and having babies. And so I found myself in 2008 as a new mom. And I was invited to come sing at a church in Middle Tennessee, here where I live. And we just connected with this church. We loved the people and the sense of community that we found there. We hadn't really found a church community like that since we'd been married. And so about 8 months in to our time of attending this church, the pastor invited me to be a part of a pretty intensive study group. And what I didn't realize at the time was that the study group was really more of a kind of group deconstruction. And so I came with my Bible and my notebook all ready to study. And it was in the class that the pastor revealed that he was actually more of an agnostic. He called himself a hopeful agnostic. And so all of these claims started coming up against everything I'd ever believed about Jesus and about God, and especially about the Bible. And everything was sort of put up on this intellectual chopping block and just kind of hacked to pieces with what really seemed at the time to me to be flawless logic. Because while I knew the Bible, I had never really formally studied theology. Like Lisa mentioned, I had experiences with God that I knew that I felt his presence. I knew that he had spoken to me or this or that, or I knew sure. He was real. I could feel him. And so, all of these intellectual arguments started coming around, and I realized that I'd never really looked at my faith through an intellectual lens. And so through the course of about 4 or 5 months, my husband and I decided to leave the church. We didn't really want to raise our daughter there. And so it was after we left the church that what I realized now was my own deconstruction started to happen. I went through an incredibly dark time of doubt. Just not just doubting the Bible, not just doubting Jesus' resurrection or the claims that he made, but just even questioning every mystical and every experience that I'd ever had with God. You know, every time in worship when I felt his presence, was that just synapses in my brain firing because it felt good because of the sociological connection I had to that group of people? And so it was really dark. And I found myself just, it felt like I'd been plunged into a stormy ocean and I had no lifeboat, no rescue boat coming, no buoy, no life jacket. And I was just dog paddling. And I was just watching my whole worldview just crumble right before my eyes. And so that's what sort of started me on the path to figure out what I believed was actually true about reality. And that's when I discovered apologetics, and that's when I discovered scholarship and this whole intellectual tradition that has undergirded Christianity for so long that I didn't even know was there.
And obviously this was, this is kind of where your story maybe takes a different trajectory to Lisa's, in as much as where Lisa kind of leaned in, I suppose, to some extent to kind of casting off perhaps some of the orthodoxies of Christianity, and I'll obviously let Lisa comment on that herself in a moment, but you found yourself actually becoming persuaded that actually a lot of these issues were actually satisfactorily dealt with on an intellectual front, that there were good reasons to believe the Bible was the word of God, that Jesus was God's son, rose again, and that sort of thing. So how long did it take for you to kind of put those pieces together again and kind of be able to, I suppose, do things like not second guess every thought you have and whether I'm, is this worship just my brain or am I actually meeting God? And because it's more than just an intellectual exercise at that level, isn't it?
Yeah, well, so it took me several years. I think I started studying somewhere toward the end of 2008, early 2009. And I mean, I'm still studying, but for me to become totally satisfied that I believed that now there were things I corrected, like when my worldview deconstructed and I was putting pieces back, there were some pieces I was like, that should have never been there in the first place. Or, that piece was in wrong, things like that. So there were course corrections that I made along the way, but a lot of those years was spent on the Bible because I really needed to know, first of all, is the Bible that's sitting in my lap even what they originally wrote? So the textual transmission, that's something I studied for years and took seminary classes. I audited all these seminary classes. And then, okay, so if we have an accurate copy of it, did they even tell the truth? Did these guys just make this stuff up? How do we know these were eyewitnesses? All those kinds of questions. And so years was spent on that. A short time in the beginning was spent just looking at basic arguments for the existence of God. I became satisfied very early that at least some kind of a God must exist from evidence. This is kind of cliche, but it would take more faith for me to not believe that than to believe that. But then who is God and how does he communicate with us? And so a lot of that time was spent just looking at the Bible. And at the end of the day, I came to the conclusion that the bones of Christianity, the definition, the thing that's made it unique in the world for 2,000 years, the claims that it's made are true. And I became completely intellectually satisfied that the Bible has been transmitted accurately, that what we have is truthful in it. And then therefore I started building from there that, yes, I actually do believe that the Bible's authoritative, that it is inspired by God and it's the word of God. And so
what's the difference? I mean, many people who go through that process, perhaps like Lisa, perhaps, you know, and I've seen a number of people, male and female, who have gone through some sort of deconstruction process, don't always put the pieces together back like you have. What's the difference, if you can? I mean, is it at the end of the day, is it fairly subjective as to whether you do or whether you don't kind of build it back up in that way?
Well, I don't know. I think I kind of see deconstruction like a Lego set. So my kids love to put Lego sets together and you've got a manual there and you start building it and inevitably we'll be building a Lego set and then something's just going wrong, right? You know, like this piece is not fitting anymore. None of these instructions make sense anymore. And so you have a choice at that point. Do you say, okay, we can just smash this thing and throw it away? Or we can just say the manual must be flawed, so it's wrong, and we'll just walk away from this. Or you could, you know, pick all the pieces off and start over and maybe build something different than the designer had intended it to look like. Or, you know, the hard thing is to actually start picking each piece apart, looking at it with reason, with evidence from the world around you, and start figuring out which, you know, if you get back far enough, it's hard, but you get back and you realize, oh, man, like, you know, 800 steps ago, I put this piece in wrong. And that's why everything else is going off. And so you go back and you rebuild. And so that's kind of how I see what I did. I can't speak for others. I don't know, you know, what would motivate someone to believe something else. Obviously, they would have to tell you. But I know for me, it was a lot of hard work. And I was prepared that if this was not true, that I would abandon it. I don't want to believe something that's not true. And I guess for me, truth is really important. I want what I think about the world to reflect what's real about the world, what's true about the world. And so although we can see things from different perspectives, whatever we're looking at is actually something that is something. And so I wanted to adjust my perspective to see it truly and rightly. Yeah. And so I think, you know, just speaking for myself, that's kind of how I see it.
Great, great start to the show. And really just the first section of today's show, just both of you laying out your stories, which I think was an important part of this. And we'll really dig into it and have more of a conversation between you both as we progress. This is Unbelievable. And in the next section of today's program, I'm going to be continuing chatting to Lisa Gunga and Alisa Childers, both talking about their journey of deconstruction, doubt and finding faith again, but where they've ended up in sort of different places. Ultimately, Lisa's new book is called The Most Beautiful Thing I've Seen, Opening Your Eyes to Wonder. I'll make sure there are links to her as well. LisaGunga.com from today's program. More about Alisa Childers at AlisaChilders.com and her apologetics work as well. And we'll be back in a short moment's time. The UK's leading faith debate show is coming to Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa. Join me, Justin Brierley, for Unbelievable Live in LA on Friday the 11th and Saturday the 12th of October. On Friday night, I'll be joined by renowned Christian thinker Professor John Lennox and LA's leading secular talk show host Dave Rubin to debate God, faith, and atheism. Then Saturday is Unbelievable the Conference, a day to learn from Christian thinkers from the UK and USA on how to make the case for Christ, featuring J. Warner Wallace, Mary Jo Sharp, Brian Broderson, and from the UK, John Lennox, Ruth Jackson, and me, your host, Justin Brierley. Book your place for the big conversation on faith this October at unbelievable.live.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Welcome back to today's show. We're talking about deconstruction, doubt, and finding faith again. Really excited about the guests joining me on the show today, Lisa Gunga and Alisa Childers, both with careers in the Christian music industry. Both have gone through spells of severe doubt and deconstruction when it comes to faith. But they've both kind of come out of it, but with sort of different perspectives. And that's what we're going to be discussing in the rest of today's programme. Lisa, you've sort of written very eloquently about your journey in your new book, The Most Beautiful Thing I've Seen. Listening to Elisa's story, I'm sure there are parts of that that you can connect with, but also in a way you've obviously gone in a different direction, having encountered probably some quite similar issues. So what's the difference, would you say, between the way you tackled it and the way Elisa has tackled it in the end?
I think the difference would be, that I see all the streams of religions leading to the same well. I believe the Bible is good, and I'm not in a place of deconstruction anymore and trying to find and poke the holes. I loved your story. I loved it so much. It's so beautiful, and I really resonate with so much of it. I think for me, it became so intellectual for me. Mm-hmm. And I thought if I figured it out enough or if I studied enough, then I could, that would be the foundation. So for me, it had to be an undoing. It was a process of totally unknowing, and there wasn't a piece to take out and put back in like the Lego set. Because the moment I would do that for me, I would, was that piece true? And for me, Jesus and the Bible and this path of Christianity that I had been on was, and then deconstructing. The deconstruction was not a blip. It was the thing that was always my Christianity, my faith was always leading to. And that's like, I think that's what's happened to us. That's what happens when you are seeking God, you get to the bottom of it all. What? And I think that's the point. So like every good, great teacher and good guru, that's the thing, that you're given a riddle. You're given this thing that you try to figure out. You walk away and you have a journey or a lifetime trying to figure out the riddle. But the point is we can so reside here in our head trying to figure it out and thinking we can actually prove that God exists. And you can't. It's not a scientific thing you can pull apart and look under a microscope. So for me, it was all an undoing all the things that I know. And I'd taken seminary classes. I went to so many different workshops, weekend things about the Bible, trying to figure it out so that I could prove it. And that never.
You don't feel like you ever got there, and that wasn't a fruitful way. I mean, obviously, in this process, apart from that sort of one day where you sort of declared, well, I'm an atheist, you never felt belief in God evaporate exactly? I mean, there was actually, though, about a year ago, I think, that viral BuzzFeed video, which I think initially was titled I Stopped Believing in God After Pastoring a Mega Church. But I don't think that was quite the title you thought it was going to have, was it?
No, and that was funny. I actually told them, I was like, okay, I'll do a video, but like, I don't want it to be about that I don't believe in God anymore or church. Like, I'm done with that thing. Like, that's I'm so past that.
Right.
Like, can we talk about the beauty of life and what our daughters have done for us? Can we talk about other things? And nope.
they
wanted the title.
Hey, they know what makes clicks, don't they? But I guess the point being, it struck me from the book that in a sense you weren't that worried about diving deep, at least in the book, into those particular objections and things. It was more that I got the sense that you'd moved into a different way of seeing religion and God. Ultimately, even by the end of it, you were sort of describing God as the divine mother, and sort of. Just this kind of quite open-ended relationship almost to what that might be. It's still quite mystical in that sense. From where you're sitting now, Lisa, do you use the label Christian? Is that not one you'd particularly use? And it's so difficult because this, you know, it might change from day to day, who knows, but what would... If someone asked, hey, what do you believe then, Lisa? Is there an easy way of summing it up in a label or a phrase or a sentence?
I do consider myself part of the Christian community. But I really think Jesus had it down when people say, well, who are you? You know, there's so much into like, what we tell people we are, like what we're asking people is, are you safe? Mm. Are you a safe person? I think is what they're getting at. Can I believe you? Can I trust you? So when they would say, who are you? And he would say, well, I am.
He wasn't always prepared to give, he wasn't always prepared to give people the obvious answers they were sometimes looking for.
So if we're looking for like, a short thing of how to sum that up, that's what I would say. If someone's like, well, what are you? Who are you? I am. Do you consider yourself part of the Christian community? Yeah, I do. I really do. Hmm. I love Jesus very much.
What's your take on all this, Elisa? What was your response firstly to some of, you know, the videos around where Lisa got to and you know, what she's written and spoken about when it comes to where she finds herself ultimately?
Well, one part of my story that I forgot to mention was that the church I was at where this kind of group study happened ended up becoming a progressive Christian community. So that's why I've been so passionate to learn more about progressive Christianity and understand what progressive Christians believe, because so many of my friends and people that I was in community with went in that direction. And so I read Lisa's book and I thought it was, you know, beautifully written. And I thought you wrote with such vulnerability. It was a lot I related with in your book as well.
Yeah.
But I would actually agree with Lisa that I don't like using the word proof, because I think it's a really strong word. I prefer, trust based on evidence, reason, using your reason and things like this. But I think it's just interesting, a comment that Lisa made, where Lisa, you said that you believe that many paths lead to the same well. And talking about different, if I'm understanding you correctly, different religious traditions and different, all leading to God, or who you might call the Divine Mother.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to me because that's really a truth claim about objective reality. That's a claim, an objective truth claim. And so either many paths lead to the same well, or if Christianity is true and it's exclusive and Jesus is the only way, well, then one of those is false and they can't both be true at the same time. They could both be wrong. But so I think I just always, as much as, because I'm an artist too, I think in metaphors and all of this. But no matter how much I personally get into the metaphor and all this, it always circles me back around. Like, these are both objective truth claims. These are both claims about reality. And so for me, I wanted my view of reality to be based on the evidence that I see in the world, and evidence through science, evidence through through all the different ways that we can observe evidence. And so, I don't think it solves the problem. I think that we're both kind of making exclusive claims about who God is and how to get to him, and how to practice that, and how to live that out. And so, you know, that was just kind of my observation.
Yeah. And I mean, at this point in my life, I'm not trying to tear apart anyone's construct. I think we all need constructs, and whatever someone chooses, unless it's an oppressive, if it's oppressing someone, if it's oppressing a people group, if it's harmful, I'm not into that. But if it's leading people, and if it's helpful, and it's helping you love yourself more and love your kids and your family and everyone around you, that's beautiful. That's so beautiful. When I say many, like, these religions leading to the same well, I'm also not saying that we're ever outside of God. I think God is always within and around us, always. Saying that there's one way to find, go ahead.
I was going to just say that the question that arose for me, I suppose, is, you know, with that image in mind of many paths leading up the mountain or the well or whatever, but at the same time saying, I still love Jesus. And what do you, because the average Christian might think, oh great, she's a Christian just like me. But that might mean something different to you, Lisa. So what role, if you like, does Jesus now play specifically in your faith? Is it more just that he is a good sort of example of someone who stood against, you know, oppressive structures, or is there a kind of sense in which you do believe Jesus is God come to us in some special, unique way, or do you not so much feel that now?
Well, I mean, I know this is kind of a loaded thing, but I believe that Jesus is Son of God, and I believe that we're all children of God. So I think Jesus, I'm not discounting anything that Jesus claimed of himself, or what Christianity claims of Jesus. But I also don't think that's exclusive to Jesus.
Okay.
So just a quick question. When Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life, no one comes to the Father but through me, what would you make of that?
I don't know. I think there's so many things that I used to be able to say, wow, let me totally pick this apart. I don't know fully. I think Jesus is speaking into a deep truth about who he was. And if you see him, you see the Father. The one way thing. Yeah, I get it. That's why would he say that? I don't know.
I mean, coming to you, Elisa, I guess, you know, I can understand fully, you know, when I hear my skeptical friends, that this is an issue for them. You know, the if you are claiming an exclusivity when it comes to Christ, it seems unfair on the face of it. You know, why should there only be one way, and so on? I mean, what presumably this was all part of the big melange of questions you had as you started to unpick things and work it out. What became the resolution for that? Is it unfair? Is it unfair that Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life, if that's the way you understand him to mean it, in the sense of there's only one path to God and it's through me?
I see it like this. I've thought about this question, and I've thought about it like, let's say that there's this chasm between you know, God, or let's say, let's not even use that in the metaphor. So let's say that there's this deep chasm that you can't get across. If you try to cross, if you try to jump over to the other side, you're going to fall in because you can't make the jump. It's too far and you can't get across. But where you are, it's just dry and there's no food and there's no water and you're going to die if you're there. But then somebody comes along on the other side and says, hey, I'm going to build this bridge and I'm going to put it down and you can come across. I just feel for me to say, well, that's so unfair that that's the only way that I can get across to the side where there's food and water and grass and all this beautiful things. You know, I don't think that's fair. I think for me that it would feel like that. Whereas I just look at what Jesus did for me and I have a heart that is just overflowing with gratefulness, and it motivates me to want to tell more people about this beautiful bridge. And so, but I do understand where Lisa's coming from on this, because I have many friends who didn't, you know, settle that question in the same way that I did. But I'm just seeing the person building the bridge for me and I'm going, thank you. You know, that's great. And I think too, where there may be a bit of a difference too, is that, again, with all the study I did on the Bible, I wanted to know that the words that are recorded attributed to Jesus, you know, are those true? Are those true words? Is that what he really said? And if it's not, then where am I going to get my information about Jesus? Well, it's going to be heavily subjective, which Lisa might end up knowing a different Jesus than I might end up knowing. And then how do we decide between the two of us who's got the real Jesus? And so for me, I've chosen to put my trust in the way I believe God's revealed himself to the world, which is through Jesus, through his word. And so I see it as a beautiful gift, a beautiful story. The gospel is, you know, it's not just a get out of hell free card or just, you know, fire insurance. Like I think, you know, you mentioned that earlier that you were questioning some things about the evangelical culture. I question things about the evangelical culture too. But it's the gospel, I think, that stands so strong. And it's a beautiful narrative arc that we find all throughout the Bible. And so, yeah, in my heart, in my mind, those things are settled. I that's what causes me to worship and to praise God and thank God for the gift of Jesus.
Any response, Lisa, or anything you want to add on top of that?
I think that's all very valid what you're saying. And for us, we were looking at the Bible and where did that come from? And then where does everything that we believe is all built on a reality that we believe in. So how far down do you go that rabbit hole? And for me, we went all the way down, all the way down. And again, I think it's beautiful. I think I love where you've ended up. I think that's really beautiful. And I don't want the crux of my life to be about like combating someone else's belief system.
Sure.
No, I think that's a futile thing, but I'm interested. I'm still interested in the conversation. I think it's like fascinating how we've all come to where we've come to.
I mean, I was just going to ask Lisa, I mean, would you say that now you don't necessarily believe in any of those specific doctrines of Christianity? I don't know how much you kind of specify where you are. So if you were to say, you know, do you believe in God, three persons in one, Trinitarian, do you believe Jesus rose from the dead, would you say all of that is kind of up for grabs at some level in the way you now approach faith? You don't see those as necessarily intrinsic to Christian belief?
Yeah, I definitely don't see it as you have to believe those things to be a Christian. But I think there's something really interesting about the Trinity. And when we talk about, like, I've had mystical experiences where it feels like, oh, this is how, sorry, my hands got real big in the video.
That's okay.
Like, if this is God, oh yeah, then this is how God experiencing herself, himself, itself, whatever you pronoun you like to use, as separateness. Mm. So I see it all as the one thing, but the God that loves to experience the Trinity, and then the Trinity breaks apart into all of it.
Mm, mm.
And so I think it's just this thing that there's so much that my mom told me growing up that I felt like, no, I can really figure it out. But it's the unknowable. It's the unknowable thing. So was Jesus raised from the dead? I don't know. And I think it's really crazy that we've had all these debates around something we just can't know.
What's your?
I think it's really cool. I mean, yeah, I'd love to believe that. I think it's possible, absolutely.
Yeah,
but I don't have a definitive answer. Sure. If I'm like, yes, it happened. No, it happened.
Yeah,
none of us were there.
Elisa, what would you say to that? How important do you think it is to kind of bed down in some of those beliefs? I mean. And you, part of the reason why, you know, we're having this show is because there's been lots of questions recently. You know, I mentioned earlier Hillsong worship leader Marty Sampson had this kind of was a lot of headlines about him in social media suddenly questioning lots of aspects of Christian faith. I don't know whether he's sort of shelved it completely or is maybe on a journey of trying to work it out. But at the end of the day, it sounds like Lisa's saying, you know, I can get along with people whether they do or don't believe that, and I don't see it as majorly important. We weren't there. How important would something like that, the resurrection of Jesus, be when it comes to you sort of defining as a Christian?
Yeah, well, I believe Christianity literally stands or falls based on the resurrection being a real event in history. And I agree, Lisa, none of us were there, but at the same time, there's historical evidence even outside the Bible for supporting the resurrection of Jesus. And Paul said, if Christ has not been raised, your faith is in vain and you're still in your sins. So essentially what Paul is saying there is that if Christ wasn't physically raised from the dead, then this is all pointless. This is all worthless. I mean, go believe something else, but Christianity is not true if Jesus wasn't raised from the dead. And the resurrection of Jesus can be found throughout all the creeds. It can be found in actually the earliest creed that most scholars, even the most liberal and atheist ones, are going to date within 3 and 7 years of Jesus' death, includes a belief in the resurrection linked with according to the scriptures. And so if you're going to talk about Christianity in any kind of meaningful historic sense, then you have to include, in my opinion, you have to include the physical resurrection of Jesus. This is what the earliest Christians believed. It's why Christianity got off the ground in the first place. If there wasn't a resurrection, then Jesus would have just been another one of those guys claiming to be the Jewish Messiah. There were lots of those around that time. And so if I believed the resurrection wasn't real, it didn't really happen, I wouldn't be a Christian. I would probably just do what I find to be the most beautiful type of, you know, spirituality or whatever, just follow my feelings, follow what feels right. But I wouldn't be a Christian. I wouldn't call myself a Christian. And I think that to talk about Christianity in any kind of a meaningful sense, even historically, it would have to include that. So yeah, that's
quick.
Yeah.
Quick response, Lisa, and then we'll go to our final break.
Yeah. And I really see where you're coming from. I used to believe that as well. And I'm not saying that where I've arrived is a better place. But that's why I think it's the love that Jesus showed. He came with a radical new way of living, loving your neighbor as yourself. And I think what Jesus was talking about was not just being kind to people, but I think he was pointing to the truth that we are all connected and that I am connected to you, Elisa. I am so connected to you. You are the very flesh and bones of God. So, and it's not like Jesus had such a radical way of living. he showed such a radical love. That's why I would say, yeah, I'm a Christian. Did he die? Was he crucified? Yeah, I believe that. Did his physical body rise again? I don't know. But the crux of my love, or you could say belief, like it doesn't hinge on that. To me, the story of Jesus is about love, not about death and resurrection. And I know a lot of people would disagree because Paul, but Paul, who is Paul? there's so much that Paul said that was even, he was kind of a huge sexist as well, many other things. Paul was really beautiful in many areas, but he was also, he had his own construct and his own belief system about the world and his own way of seeing reality. So,
when you say that we are connected, and I'm the when Jesus, said such and such, and I'm the flesh and bones of God, and these are very these are objective truth claims that you're making about reality, and I guess my question would be, where do you get that information? Like, how did you come to those conclusions, and where do you get that information?
I guess the start of that would be when I was read it in the Bible. We are the image of God, so I'm sure that's where that idea originated. We were made in the image of God. So I guess that's one thing that I haven't. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
I was just going to chime in here to say we are approaching the end of this segment, and we can pick this conversation up again in a moment. But obviously, you know, as I fully expected, coming to some, fairly obvious distinctives between you both, Elisa obviously taking the view that there are objective truth claims at stake here, and she believes that Jesus was the Son of God, rose again, and that there are ways of knowing that to be true, both historically and experientially. Obviously, you, Lisa, take a very different view to that at this stage in your journey. I appreciate the way you're both willing to kind of, open up on this, though, and have an honest conversation, and I've really enjoyed it so far. We've just got another 5 or 10 minutes in the last segment of today's program to finish up this conversation. My guests on Unbelievable are Lisa Gunga and Elisa Childers. We're talking deconstruction, doubt, and finding faith again. We'll be back in a short moment.
World-class Bible teachers, including Albert Moeller and Alistair Begg, are coming to London. Ligonier Ministries' first ever UK conference is taking place this September, and you can go free. You'll get 2 tickets worth £118 completely free of charge when you subscribe to Premier Christianity magazine. Subscribe now and get your free tickets to the Light of the World conference at premierchristianity.com/subscribe.
Welcome along to the final part of this week's edition of Unbelievable with me, Justin Briley, the programme that brings you conversations that matter, and it's part of Faith Explored, our range of shows that help you to think through your faith every Saturday on Premier Christian Radio. But lots of people choose to tune in via the podcast, so welcome along wherever you're listening from. If you can tune in a little bit later on here on Premier Christian Radio, on the profile between 4 and 5, Sinclair Ferguson sits down with Sam Hales to talk about his life, faith and ministry. He's one of the biggest names in Reformed circles in the UK, and he's among a number of speakers at this year's Ligonier Conference in London on the 27th and 28th of September. That'll also feature people like Al Mola and Alistair Begg. Well, he's on the profile this afternoon between 4 and 5. You can get the profile on its own podcast as well. There's lots of interesting conferences coming up over the autumn. The Premier Digital Conference, if you've never been before, it really is a one-of-a-kind, unique kind of conference in the whole of the UK, because it's specifically aimed at people who are working on websites, social media, all of that kind of thing, in churches, in Christian ministries, even who just have their own interest in it. And they bring in absolutely stacks of speakers every year. People at the very top of their game, people at the head of technology companies and all kinds of things. I think they've got a significant individual from Facebook actually addressing the conference this year. But if you want to get along to this year's conference on the 2nd of November in London, the early bird offer actually ends this coming Monday, I believe. That's Monday the 9th of September. So now is a good time to book yourself in if you want to get along to that. PremierDigital.info is the website for information and booking, premierdigital.info, for this year's Premier Digital Conference. After we've finished our discussion on today's show, I'm sitting down to speak to Amy Orr Ewing. She's a well-known apologist and evangelist with Ravi Zacharias International Ministries. And what you're going to be hearing later on this programme is actually just a segment of a longer interview that I'll be airing next week on The Profile. How she became a Christian, some of the extraordinary stories, especially in her student years, which were quite eye-opening, but also about her current ministry and Reboot, which is an excellent event for young people, coming up on Saturday the 21st of September in central London. So listen out for Amy a little later on in the programme talking about that. Of course, we've got our own conference coming up in LA, or at least Costa Mesa. So many people have emailed me saying, it's not in LA, it's in Costa Mesa. Yes, I know. We decided on Unbelievable Live in LA as a kind of, well, it's the LA region, right? The LA region. Anyway, maybe we'll call it something different next time. But anyway, we're calling it Unbelievable Live in LA, and we hope you can be with us on the 11th and 12th of October. It's going to be a really fun evening with a live edition of the show between John Lennox and Dave Rubin on the Friday night. And Saturday, all day, we'll have Unbelievable, the conference, with some brilliant speakers across the course of the day. So do get yourself booked in and maybe let others know about it. Perhaps you can bring a group from a church if you're part of one. Unbelievable.live. I would love to meet you there. I'll be signing copies of my own book, of course. There'll be loads of opportunities to meet all the speakers, and looking forward to meeting lots of Unbelievable listeners in the California area. And of course, that John Lennox and Dave Rubin discussion will form part of this autumn's new season of The Big Conversation, which kicks off again next week as Brett Weinstein and Alistair McGrath meet to talk about religion, useful fiction, or ultimate truth. We just released our video promo for this new season of The Big Conversation. Let's hear it.
What I want to invite Roger to comment on is, why couldn't the mental realm include an infinite consciousness?
God and the universe.
It's too much like us. It's too much like putting it like, yes, like the Greek views of the gods in some sense. They were like too much like us.
They were finite and contingent. Here we're talking about a metaphysically necessary source.
Religion and evolution.
I admire this noble aspiration to find the highest possible ideal. It's almost as if you're proposing a new religion. To meet this new challenge.
It's not a new religion. Yes. What it is something that sits in the same place. Mm. It addresses some of the same needs, but it is not founded on the same principle.
Jesus and the Gospels.
If the New Testament says that Jesus did X, Y, and Z, did he do it or not?
I don't think it's a story that's made by committee. Am I going to have a later literary genius who comes up with a great story like this? Or am I going to say, no, Jesus is the genius, and somehow that story has basically been preserved?
More big thinkers, more big conversations. Season 2 of The Big Conversation is coming. Be the first to watch by subscribing at thebigconversation.show. If you get subscribed to the Unbelievable newsletter there, you'll receive immediate notifications when new shows drop. That's going to be every 3 weeks or so from next week that you'll hear new shows. Some of the voices you heard in that promo were people like William Lane Craig, Sir Roger Penrose, Brett Weinstein, Alistair McGrath, Bart Ehrman, and Peter J. Williams, just some of the contributors to this new season of The Big Conversation. Very exciting stuff. Do get yourself subscribed and watch at thebigconversation.show. For now, it's time to get into the final part of today's discussion.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Super interesting program today. Lisa Gunga and Elisa Childers both joining me on the show. Find out more about Lisa and her book, The Most Beautiful Thing I've Seen, at lisagungor.com. Elisa Childers is available at elisachilders.com. She's got an apologetics ministry and podcast there as well. And Elisa, coming back to you, as we've been talking about this whole issue of your different journeys of deconstruction, the fact that you put it together again, back to a sort of, you know, something more like an evangelical Christian faith compared to where Lisa finds herself. I mean, you're not the first person to have gone on this journey, nor is Lisa. And in some ways, I've seen both of your stories in different ways coming out. You know, I've met people, Elisa, who have gone your direction. Many people have gone Lisa's direction or beyond, you know, to full-blown atheism or something. Elisa, what are you seeing around you? There's a number of stories recently, you know, of I think increasingly Christian leaders of one kind or another who may be either questioning faith or ditching it altogether or coming to some kind of quite progressive view. I guess particularly that's probably in the area of sexuality. I think one Christian might say of another, well, you've gone too far now that you you know, embrace LGBT same-sex relationships, whatever it might be. And obviously significant Christian people like the late Rachel Held Evans, Jennifer Hatmaker, and Sarah Bessie, I noticed just recently, has sort of I think she's held the view for a while, but sort of went very public with it on a blog post on that front. I mean, is this something that concerns you, Elisa, that when you see obviously some of your contemporaries in the Christian world who are traveling in that kind of a direction when it comes to their faith?
Yeah, I see it a lot. I think it's something that's happening all around us. And since I actually started talking most exclusively about progressive Christianity on my blog and podcast, I've had just email after email from people who are seeing this happen with their friends and at their churches. And I think the thing that, and this is probably why I keep coming back to truth, and I know it just makes me sound like just such a, you know, truth, pounding that hammer of truth, but because I think that we have to start with what's true, and then we can think about right practice. And so what I'm seeing with a lot of my friends that have gone into the progressive world or gone even further into atheism or agnosticism is there are almost no converts to progressive Christianity from a different worldview or from atheism. In fact, every progressive Christian that I can think of has come out of the evangelical church. So why is that? And I think that right now we're looking at a lot of abuse scandals in the evangelical church. And I think people, I've have friends who have been through legitimate abuse at their churches. They've witnessed hypocrisy. They have trouble with biblical sexuality or trouble with the Bible. You know, as Rachel Held Evans wrote so eloquently in her book, that God that was supposed to be the hero of the story was starting to look like the villain. You know, and she describes kind of her change of view in the Bible based on that. And, you know, maybe growing up in a Christian bubble where we weren't exposed to other worldviews, all of those are elements that I see playing a part in people's deconstruction. But in reality, those are things that, you know, like the abuse, like we need to deal with that. We need to talk about it. We need to correct it. But the gospel, the truth of who God is, how he revealed himself to the world, doesn't change. And so, yes, we need to correct the things that we've gotten wrong. But I think it just makes me sad to see people leave the gospel because of something like that, because they became uncomfortable with biblical morality, or you know, they met someone from a different denomination that they were told were going to hell, and they realized no, they're actually, they love Jesus too, and so I think there are a lot of factors that play a part in sending someone on that path. And so I would just encourage anyone listening to base what you believe about the world on what's objectively true and on evidence, on reason, and then build a right practice from there.
Lisa, I guess you've seen, you know, a lot of your friends and other people in Christian ministry who've gone on a similar journey to you. How often do you bump into people who've taken the path that Elisa does? And what do you think about that statement she made about the idea that, you know, progressive Christianity doesn't produce converts in a sense, because that's an interesting perspective on it, I suppose, if you're just looking at the kind of that at that level. Does it, you know, is it just the place where a more conservative evangelical form of Christianity kind of resides eventually if it passes into that, but it doesn't tend to grow new converts in that sense from the world around? And maybe that's just not even important to you at this point in your journey. Just be interested in your thoughts on that, Lisa.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen any, I haven't seen the studies on that, so I don't, I'd be interested in seeing exactly what that looks like. But I also, it's not a problem for me. I don't really care about that. And I'm not saying that in a putting anyone else down kind of way, but I don't see that as a problem.
In terms of others and the journey that they've gone on, would you say that you're seeing a lot of your contemporaries taking a similar path to the one you and Michael have trod?
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, when we were deconstructing, we didn't even call it deconstructing because we didn't know that word. And then,
same here.
Yeah. We were just like, we just feel like everything's falling apart. And then all of a sudden we're like, that's called deconstruction. So of course it's happened to so many before, but just in this circle that we were in, we hadn't experienced that, or we weren't talking to anyone who had gone through that. But now, you know, Michael and his friend Mike McCarg have a podcast about it, and with our music, and it just feels like there has been this, everyone who has gone through that or is going through that, there are a lot of them are finding each other. So I feel like that's really beautiful. Again, I think it's a necessary path. I think we need to allow space for people to feel what they're feeling and to doubt what they're doubting. And when we put a lid on that or judge that, or say they shouldn't be feeling that, I think that really stifles an important part of their faith or lack of faith or whatever, wherever their path is going. There has been so little room in the Christian circles for doubt and for questions and for it seems like so much of it has been built on certainty. And in arriving at that, like, yeah, you can doubt and question for a while, but you need to arrive at some kind of certainty. So I see where a lot of people who have been where we've been, I see them coming to some really beautiful truths and discovering that they don't need to transcend the body to find God, but it's this inward God is always found within. And what I've found is the more inward I go, the more, because I never allowed that. I should clarify. Like I always felt like this was the flesh is evil, right? And the Bible talks about that. This, we have to cast off the flesh. There's so much about the body. Well, then why was the body made if this is intrinsically bad? Mm-hmm. So I feel like for the first time in my life, a few years ago, I was inward and found the cosmos, source, divine mother, God within. And then that is what led me to the realization of the connection of all things. I don't know if that, answer your question.
But it is where you've got to, obviously, in your journey, obviously, as I said, a very different place to where Elisa is. Mm-hmm. I mean, just as we close out, Elisa, I think, you know, you've both been so polite to each other on today's program, and that's great. But in a way, I got the sense that maybe Lisa was questioning at some level the certainty aspect of maybe the way how you approach things. So Elisa, yeah. you need things to be true. You need, you know, that there to be kind of really good evidence that this is part of Christianity is true. You're open to people questioning and having doubts. Lisa says they don't necessarily have to arrive at a certain place in the end. Maybe that's okay for them just to kind of exist in that space for, you know, for the whole of their life. Yeah. For you, it's important that people don't stay in the doubt and deconstruction phase, but do come back to some sort of a level of certainty in Christian faith.
Well, I would hope that the point of deconstructing your beliefs would be to reconstruct to something true, I think that often people have a wrong definition of the word faith. I do not define faith as certainty. I don't think that's how the Bible uses the word. I also don't think faith and doubt are opposites. I think the opposite of faith is unbelief. It's not doubt. And I 100% agree with Lisa that the church needs to do better in providing places for Christians to come with their honest doubts. That is something I did have as a kid. Of course, I didn't have any honest doubts because I didn't really doubt till I was an adult, but I never felt like there was a question I couldn't ask or that anything was off limits. My parents were just really open about that kind of stuff. And so I feel like that was such a helpful part of my formation as a Christian. And I've seen it. I've seen what she's talking about, where you shouldn't think those things or you shouldn't ask those questions here. And part of what even we as apologists do is try to provide answers and ways to think about things that address people's real questions. But I think at the end of the day, everybody needs to figure out within themselves, am I asking a question just so I can find the next question, or actually do I really want the answer? And I think I was the kind of person where I really was asking questions, seeking answers. And so does that mean that it's certainty? No, I wouldn't call it that. I think the Bible describes faith as trust. And over and over again in scripture, we see Jesus being so tender with doubters, but always offering evidence. You know, John the Baptist in prison, doubting, are you the one, or should we look for another? And Jesus sends his disciples back saying, tell John what you've seen. And he performed miracles as evidence for John's doubt. And so I think that I agree that faith is not certainty and it's not doubt either. Faith is trust based on evidence. And I think that there is really good reason to trust that the Christian worldview is true. And I think it brings a great deal of stability and hope because Jesus said he's the truth. And so as a person who follows Jesus and loves Jesus, I love truth because Jesus is truth.
Yeah, I think the thing for me that I would differ on that would be, you said trust. Oh, yes. I feel like that is what I've been learning so much more even this past year. But trust that I just don't know. So trust on evidence. I don't trust the evidence. Because what is the evidence? The evidence is the reality that only I can understand and see. And this reality, this plane that we're all experiencing is not the ultimate reality. So with that argument, I'm trusting the evidence that's actually objective evidence. So for me, trust and faith is all about just the letting go. I felt like this past year it was kind of funny because in terms of Enneagram, I'm an Enneagram 2. And I always wanted, my husband is an Enneagram 5. Are you?
I'm afraid I'm not, but increasingly people reference it and I feel like I really should get my head around it. But
talk about the new, there should be, I'm sure there's cults somewhere starting new religions or are based around the Enneagram. It's bonkers. But so the 5 can get really caught up in their mind and in their thoughts and it's hard for them to be in their body. Mm. An Enneagram 2, very typical would be I'm the helper. I like to help people. Mm. Those are very blanket statements about numbers. And obviously any construct we hold lightly, it's just another construct to help people understand their personality type. But when I found out about the numbers, I was I want to be a 5. That sounds the people who are the thinkers and just so caught up in their head, that sounds more mysterious and I don't know why. Obviously I'm drawn to a 5. That's who I'm married to. Yeah. So that makes sense for me. Yeah. But I feel like this last year, I got more caught up in my head than I ever have been.
Mm. That's interesting.
And this is after deconstruction.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
So for me, it became more about just reality. What is reality? What is underneath all the things that my brain is putting together to help me survive?
Sounds like there might be another book in the works in a few years' time. Who knows?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I've been learning.
Yeah.
I just feel like I've been experiencing so much about the body, and I might be writing about the body next. When we talk about faith and truth, to me, that's all faith is letting go of anything that I think I know. Yeah.
Our time is unfortunately drawing to a close. So, Okay. Can I just say thank you both for a really great conversation, and thank you very much. Sorry, there was many things we didn't cover from the book as well, Lisa. Obviously, a lot of it covers the experience of having Lucy, who has mm-hmm. Down syndrome, and that's again very beautifully put in the book. But I will leave that to one side for now and say thank you both for being with me on the show today. Do go out and get the book if you possibly can. Do go and check out both of the websites and podcasts of my guest today, Alisa Childers and Lisa Gunga. That's at alisachilders.com and lisagunga.com. Today's show available to listen back to on our own podcast. But for the moment, Lisa and Alisa, thank you very much for joining me on the show.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks, Justin.
Pleasure, Lisa. It's nice to meet you over
nice
video.
To meet you too, Lisa.
Yeah.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Well, I'd love to hear what you made of today's conversation. Do email me, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Always welcome your thoughts via our social media too, @UnbelievableJB to follow on Twitter, facebook.com/UnbelievableJB to leave me your thoughts there. I do have a personal account as well on Instagram if you want to get in touch that way. It's just Justin.Brierley on Instagram. As I mentioned earlier, we released the new video promo for season 2 of The Big Conversation there, and lots of excitement around that when it went up on our Twitter and Facebook accounts, and also on the YouTube channel as well. George tweeted, "Greatest set of crossovers since the Marvel Comic Universe's 2-film Infinity Gauntlet saga." I'm guessing you're going to get even more brilliant interviews lined up. We are indeed. And Defree got really excited, saying, "This is the first trailer that got me gulping with every sentence. Music was great, but the questions, sentences and conversations basically made me rise on my feet. Even if I disagree or find some horrible opinions, the topics made me drool like I haven't in a very long time." So I hope you can contain your excitement, Defree. Thank you very much for tweeting your response to the video on our social media. You can, of course, find ways to get in contact as well via the website, premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. Links there, of course, to all our events. So this year's Unbelievable Conference Live in LA is available there. You can also find the book. You can find links to The Big Conversation, links to various articles, blogs and video resources too, including the Unbelievable YouTube channel, where you can find today's show in video format as well. Well, I've been promising before we get to the end of today's show to bring you Amy Orr Ewing. I sat down for a really fascinating conversation about her whole life and faith as an apologist and evangelist here in the UK, and now globally, really, as she leads much of RZIM's international work, especially their youth apologetics. So you're going to be able to hear that in full next weekend, because that'll be our profile interview here on Premier Christian Radio and also as a podcast on the Profile podcast. But I've clipped out a segment where she talks about the upcoming youth event Reboot happening in London on Saturday, the 21st of September. Here's Amy telling me all about it. I have just been in awe of what you guys have established in a relatively short time with Reboot, seeing thousands of young people turn up every year to these conferences, which go on all over the world now, but specifically coming up on Saturday, the 21st of September here in London. Before we get that, let me depress you with some statistics here. All right, Amy.
Yeah.
Okay, so apparently, according to the recent British Social Attitude Survey that came out earlier this year, Christianity very much on the decline in the UK and the West. More than half, 53% of the British public apparently now describe themselves as having no religion. And it's even more precipitous among young people. 7 in 10, 71% of young people aged 18 to 24 say they have no religion. And of course, we've had the secular society and the humanists and so on making a lot of out of that and saying, you know, just shows that we're all leaving religion and Christianity behind. So what's your response, first of all, to that kind of a statistic, Amy? And can you give us any kind of encouragement on the back of what you're seeing through Reboot?
Yeah, sure. So I think my first reaction to that kind of statistic is that I think a lot of the people who may have previously described themselves as religious who now apparently don't may not have actually been, you know, professing Bible believing Christians. I think what has fallen off a cliff is nominalism, or a kind of passive general atmosphere of Christian religion hanging around your life. So what I don't think has happened is a huge, you know, generational turning away from God, although I do think that the statistics you say significantly impact the experience of on fire Christian teenagers today. Their lived experience is that they're quite alone and that they need bolstering, they need support, they are kind of on the front line. So part of the vision for Reboot came about because we've been involved for sort of 15 years with university evangelism, and we were meeting a lot of people on campus who might have grown up in the church but had either drifted away or quite actively turned away from the faith and turned away from Jesus. And often because of some sort of intellectual question that they just said was never addressed or never resolved. And some of those questions were really quite easily resolvable, but by the time we were meeting them at university, it was almost too late. And so the vision for Reboot sort of emerged from this passion to come alongside young people at exactly that moment when they're really on the front line, going to secondary school, you're gaining independence from your family and from your church to some extent, and you're beginning to forge your identity at school. And if you're going to stand for Jesus, that is going to mean you're going to be really, really different, and it's going to mean you're going to be asked questions. And the vision and the passion of Reboot was, could we put the very best of resources at our disposal into the hands of those young people, so that they could not only hold on to their faith through those teenage years, but so that they could actually reach their world, reach their generation for Christ? That was the vision. And I remember sort of sharing it and thinking, I think it's going to be very, very niche. You know, the youth ministry world is a huge world, and I think this might be a really small part in that world, but we're called to do it. I was imagining, you know, 100 or 200. So we were overwhelmed the first year. We had over 400 teenagers come to the first ever Reboot. We wanted to make sure that it really genuinely was shaped and led by their questions. And so we have short talks. The talks are kind of 20 minutes. And then we use this Q&A platform called Pigeonhole, where they can ask their questions and people vote on which questions they want to be answered. We have loads of Q&A panels during the day. And it's sort of highly interactive, and all the speakers don't sort of retreat off to a green room. We make ourselves available to talk to every 12, 13, 14, 18 year old that wants to come and talk to us. And, you know, I've found everything from the pastor's child who had a question about a particularly graphic Old Testament story, and he just couldn't understand what it meant or how it could be in the Bible. And, you know, I spent 15 minutes with him, talking him through the narrative structure of the Bible, what, you know, what the nature of that writing was, how it fitted, how we can understand that God is a God of judgment and a God of love in the context of this text. We talked it all through together. And to my total surprise, he absolutely burst into tears and said, right, well, what you need to know is my faith has been hanging by a thread. I've asked everyone. I've asked my youth pastor. I've asked my parents. I've asked other pastors, and I've never found answers to these questions. And I decided if I didn't get an answer to that today, I was giving up my faith. But today I'm committing myself, and I feel called to be an evangelist. And so, you know, we prayed for him. This is like 4 or 5 years ago now.
Wow.
So amazing stuff like that. Yeah. Another story from last year at Reboot. One of our young team, a guy called Zoe, was speaking on suffering and sharing some of his testimony. And this 14-year-old boy comes up to him in tears and says, basically, you know, 2 years ago, my mum died. And at the funeral, I was asking, you know, lots of questions in my heart, and a church leader at the funeral, his mum's funeral, is talking to him, and he's saying, I don't understand why God would allow this to happen. And the church leader says to him, well, the thing is that you loved your mum more than you love God, and so God had to take your mum away from you.
Gosh, wow.
Yeah. So Zoe is there with this boy who's heard a really solid 45-minute kind of deep apologetic around suffering. He's also heard some of Zoe's story, so he knows this isn't just theory. Zoe's able to talk through why what that person said is so wrong, and it's so antithetical to the gospel. It's absolutely the opposite of the gospel, and prays with him to receive Jesus and to experience the love of God. And you know, that child's life has changed.
Yeah, gosh.
So every year at Reboot, we're really trying to take the questions the kids are asking. So it's everything from, you know, can I smoke weed, even if it was legalized? Would it be all right to smoke weed? To, and what does God think about homosexuality? To, you know, the trans debate, to God and science. This year we've got Professor John Lennox coming to speak on God and science, and to pour confidence into the hearts of those young people that you can be a brilliant scientist and you can believe in God. These two things actually support each other. We're going to be looking at, is Christianity racist? Has the church sort of supported that? How can we answer that question? So loads of questions, and the opportunity to ask individually as well as in the big group setting. And every year as well, the opportunity to respond personally to the gospel. And teenagers bring their non-Christian friends and loads of people make commitments to Christ each year at this thing. So so excited about it. So if you are a young person or you have a young person, do consider coming along to London.
It is fantastic. And let me just give the website as well.
Rebootglobal.org
is the place to go if you want to find out more book tickets. You'll actually find that Reboot takes place all over the world, in fact. But we're specifically looking at London very soon, Saturday 21st of September.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Well, that was Amy Orr-Ewing of RZIM, apologist and evangelist. And you can hear our conversation in full, where we really delve into how she became a Christian. Some fascinating stories from her student life as well, as she went into theology at Oxford University and ended up meeting the Taliban, believe it or not. But all of that will be available on next week's edition of The Profile. If you want to listen in here on Premier Christian Radio next Saturday between 4 and 5, or on The Profile podcast, where you can find loads of great, interesting interviews. For now, thank you very much for being with me here on Unbelievable. We haven't had time for any of your feedback this week, but we'll make sure that we put some in future weeks to come. If you're on the west coast of the USA, please do head over to unbelievable.live and check out the info and tickets for Unbelievable Live in LA, the 11th and 12th of October. Time for me to sign off and leave you with details of what's coming up next week.
You're unbelievable.
Well, we'll be rebooting The Big Conversation here on Unbelievable as we begin our series of shows with high-profile Christians and atheists debating some of the biggest questions in life. And we're starting with Brett Weinstein and Alistair McGrath. This was a live conversation filmed in front of an audience in London. Brett Weinstein, a notable evolutionist in the USA, part of the so-called intellectual dark web. He's an atheist, will be in conversation with Christian theologian and biologist Alistair McGrath, debating religion, useful fiction, or ultimate truth. We've got the whole thing for you here on the podcast, and we'll be releasing the video as well on Friday, the 13th of September. Something to look forward to for next week. For the moment, thank you for being with me on the show. The Profile is here next, and I'll see you next time. You've been listening to the Unbelievable podcast. Help others find the show by rating and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts from. And discover more shows from Premier at premier.org.uk/podcasts.